is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
It's been a kind of a light weekend in the world of football, huh? Not a whole lot going on.
I got to tell you, I was like, I'm always so super impressed with Brady on the show, man. Like, I'd be ready to, like, film them and then repost them to you guys and post them online and stuff, but I don't want to seem like a groupie, but it's like I'd be like sitting there like, man, that's young O Quinn right there. Like, look at my old brother tearing it up, man. Like, y'all were cold as hell too, by the way.
Friday it was a lot colder.
Oh, y'all was
Saturday.
Getting hit. Y'all was getting hit.
We were there
Friday,
and inside the stadium when it's not full and you don't have those 111,000 other bodies to help kind of share that coldness with you, it is freezing. That wind was whipping through, y'all. No lie. Reggie's jaw locked up. Like, it was like he tried to open his mouth one time and his body just didn't function. I mean, Friday was colder. It was like 16 degrees with wind chill. And I think Saturday was more like 22, 23. But we learned our lesson Friday. And so everyone went. They got extra layers, extra stuff going. I was wearing hunting socks. People kept asking me. They're like, hey, I feel like I can see your skin underneath your pants.
Yeah,
I was like, no.
That's what I thought.
No, those were hunting socks. Those are my socks that I take out when I'm going, I'm going to go find something to bring home to eat. And trust me, those babies kept me warm. So we were prepared after Friday, but Friday was a battle. I'm
Coach
not going to lie
Stoops
about that.
Legs on the first day was
oh,
the funniest
man.
Ever. Them things
started,
was on the move.
Yes, his hands. I felt bad, man, because I was like, oh, no, you're not getting rid of that. Like, once you start shaking, anyone who's been out in the cold like that for a period of time, you're not getting it back. And then your teeth start chattering and you're having a hard time talking. Like, it's, I'll tell you what, man. I still don't consider anything I do really work. It's all fun. It's all play. That was cold. Like, that was edging on, like, okay, this is a little more than I thought.
So, in order, who handled it from worst to best of the entire crew? Because did you handle it better than anybody else?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I'll be honest with you, man. Rob Stone probably handled it as good as anyone.
Yeah.
He had to speak the entire time. And you couldn't really tell he was bothered by it. Like, it was – I mean, when you have to talk that much, I'm telling you, your whole face gets so cold, you can't feel your face. Then you can't really
move. I can't feel my face.
You can't feel your face. And then you start trying to talk, and you're like, man, my mind's working, but my mouth can't, like, keep up with it to, like, talk. Like, I know what I want to say, but, like, my mouth won't move fast enough because my face is so cold.
Yeah.
And you couldn't tell, dude. Like, Rob did an amazing job of that. I would say Reggie and probably – Coach Stoops the first day.
That joke was funny.
Well, Coach, I'll say this about Coach Stoops, though. He didn't even put on some long johns. Like, we went out there, and he was like, I don't know if I should put these on. We're like, yeah, you definitely should. He's like, I'm from Youngstown. I'm from Ohio. I can deal with this.
And
we're like,
then you should put them on. that's more reason to put them on.
Is that the coldest remote you guys have done? Of all the games you've been to, that had to have been the coldest.
Well, this year, for sure. Probably forever. I don't think we've done another game that was as cold as that was.
Hey, man, what a scene that was, though.
Wow.
That played out so well on television. And look, I would like to make a proclamation.
Big Ten football, baby.
This isn't me trying to kiss anybody's ass or ball wash this because we have a relationship with Fox or anything like that. I'm being 100% truthful and honest right now, and I swear to God on this, because I used to think CBS was the top notch. I don't think it's close anymore. The presentation of college football done by Fox is the best in the business. It isn't close.
It's not
close anymore. I think it's surpassed CBS, ESPN, the job Fox does, the job you guys done during the game, post game, phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And
are ball washing, but it is.
I 100% believe it.
But it's warranted.
I'll state just what's a fact. I mean, this isn't opinion. We beat the crap out of game day, and our game was the highest rated game the entire season so far. It drummed out the Iron Bowl, whatever else was on. It wasn't even close. The overnight ratings, we had a 9.1. That's roughly about 15 million people watched for the game itself. Our final hour was a 2.4.
Wow.
Which is the highest we've had all year. and by far drummed out.
Man.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
awesome.
It wasn't even close. So, you know, we've been working hard at it, building towards it, but we'll have a lot to talk about today, fellas, because we might be losing another member of our show for a period of time, if not permanently. We don't even know what's going on right now in the college football world.
Oh, yeah, it's it is a wild time in the world of college football. We're going to have a ton on that. I'm just, you know, all that being said, all the ball washing aside, I'm just trying to figure out why Brady, why did he want to open up the show with Browns Ravens? Like, I don't know. Like, he was all about it. We were talking about, like, LeVar and I were like, man, listen, you know, Rams Packers felt like the lead. That should be the game to go to first.
I wanted to live out a nightmare again. Yeah. Every time playing the Ravens, absolute nightmare in my NFL career. I want to live that out.
To be honest with you, we could lead off with the Patriots.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
I mean, another one we could lead off with are the 49ers. I mean, I love football. And the reason why I love football is because no matter what you say, no matter what you prognosticate, no matter what you believe, no matter what you think, the storyline is going to rip you and pull you and push you and hold you and glide you and slide you. It's going to be all kinds of different storylines that just hit you, and it's unscripted. It's the most unbelievably unscripted reality TV show that you will ever watch. I mean, it never gets old.
And New England has a legitimate chance to be the number one seed in the AFC.
Bro.
I don't think anybody before the year would have said that. Not a shot in hell.
I am blown. Bill Belichick is he's coach of the year, hands down to me. Like, that's – I mean, I was trying to put dirt on him at one point. I mean, like, how is his glacier starting to melt, and is it going to turn into a warm seat if they don't turn it around at some point? I mean, they've not only turned it around, they are phenomenal right now.
Yeah.
That was a phenomenal win for them.
I didn't get the line on that game was 7 points, I think it was, last week.
It opened at 5.5. It crept to 7.
See, I didn't understand it. I thought, man, you know, I like New England. I've been ball washing Belichick, as we keep with the theme, throughout the course of the year. But I just don't see how they're that much better than Tennessee, even minus Derrick Henry. I stand corrected. Like, that was an absolutely dominating performance by the Patch yesterday.
I mean, look, a win's a win in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes, you know, and I'm guilty of this. I'll admit this right now. All the time, I kind of go back and forget. Because, look, many of the times I was the team that wasn't expected to win. I was playing as an underdog. So I understand the mentality of a lot of these guys going into it. But that was a matchup where I think had they not dominated them the way they did, I mean, it was 36-13, and to be honest, it was worse than that.
Yeah.
I mean, in NFL standards, that's an absolute bloodbath.
Yeah.
And so I think in two ways, you know, you look at the job of Bill Belichick, the way he's coached, but how good is Mac Jones, man?
Man,
I mean, Mac Jones is—he might be playing the best as a rookie quarterback. That
go ahead. You want to say ever? You want to say ever?
Well, I'm not going to.
That's a long
say,
time.
I'll say in my lifetime. I'm trying to think of another rookie quarterback that has come in and has played as RG3, maybe.
RG3 had an extraordinary season.
I mean, he took them to the playoffs that year. He was dynamic. He was sensational. That's the only other one that kind of came to mind.
And also because Herbert didn't play the entire season. Like, as far as start to finish.
But that didn't even make them a playoff team, dude.
Yeah.
He's playing well enough where when you're – I mean, Justin Herbert missed, what, one game? He missed Cincinnati, the opener. And then he was thrust in week two after the Tyrod Taylor lung puncture deal.
Was that week two? I thought it was later than that. Was that week two?
It was early. I think it was week two.
Oh,
it was
interesting. Early. Okay. Uh-huh.
So anyway, but, you know, RG3 was the only other one that came to mind. It's crazy to me that if you look at this too, it was all about fit. Mac Jones, not only from the way he plays, but I think what he's asked to do within the offense is the perfect fit for what Josh McDaniels wants to do. Mm. And so it's just a match made in heaven. And I'll just say this, man. Something tells me, like, I feel like I'm going to be wrong. Maybe I'm already wrong to some degree. I look at who they've beat right now and I'm going, all right. Like, you beat a Carolina team that was kind of dwindling off. You beat Cleveland, and Cleveland's not really what they were at the beginning of the season. Then you beat Atlanta, and Atlanta's not very good. Then Tennessee without Derrick Henry. Like, something's like, all right.
Could be fool's gold.
If you beat Buffalo in Buffalo this week.
Then you got to, like, give them their props.
I'm on the bandwagon. I'm rolling with you. Like, it's for real. They're going to win the AFC East. They're going to be one of the top seeds, if not the top
favorite.
Seed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to become the favorite if they do that.
This is the week. It's week 13 in the NFL. This is the week. If they win this game, this matchup, I'm saying right now, like, I'm hesitant, but I'm going to jump all in if that's the case.
That'll put them 6-0 on the road this year. And then they've got Indianapolis after that, who could be a dicey
screwed,
matchup.
Man.
I mean, come on.
They got screwed.
How so?
I mean, the referees, man. But again, I think that the twists and turns of the reality show would not be as such without referees being involved.
They are a key member to the cast.
That's a great point.
They are a key member
like,
to the cast.
Who would they be in a soap opera? Are they like the guy who comes in out of nowhere? He's not even a main character,
yeah.
but he just
the one
there's
that
a constant
always
rotation.
Is banging somebody's girlfriend
yeah.
or their wife.
yeah.
That's who referees
yeah.
are. They yeah. always come in ruining things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a good point.
Like, why are you here?
That's a good point.
Well, because
they're
I
in,
have to be.
Yeah. They're out. They're in.
That's a good
they're
point.
Out. yeah. In. They're out. And then, yeah.
But they're
yeah.
always there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in, I'm out, but I'm always
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting
in
just as
out,
much
in
as
and
you.
Out.
Yeah.
And gone again.
And I'm getting just as much as you.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get
out.
It in.
Yeah, definitely.
What?
Definitely can't relate
what?
To that.
Yeah.
That's for
that.
Sure. That is. That's how you know. And we are off and running here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Now, many of our friends are just waking up and tuning in out in Southern California and Los Angeles on the Blowtorch, AM 570 LA Sports, and they wake up to the news that you've got yourselves a brand new football coach at USC. Brady Quinn, you sit on the desk with a couple of USC honks every single weekend, and here we go. Lincoln Riley is now the head coach of the USC Trojans. He leaves Oklahoma. A huge development and story. Bruce Feldman broke it yesterday. And I think very surprising that USC was actually able to get Lincoln Riley out of Oklahoma, and he now takes over for the Trojans.
You know, I don't think it's that surprising for this reason. USC to me, and I said this to Urban Meyer back when we were working together, and they had talked to him about trying to come in and take over that head coaching position. It has to be the easiest turnaround of any college football job. When you're talking about a blue blood, one of the programs that's been so successful for such a long period of time, in part because of the talent that's there in Southern California, you don't have to leave the state. If you just dominate Southern California, you're going to be right there in the national championship title contending. And that's one of the issues they've had is over the period of time where Clay Helton has been there, they've lost out on a lot of the top recruits, in particular at quarterback. When you look at a guy like Bryce Young, who very may well end up winning the Heisman Trophy this year, Southern California kid. Matt Corral at Ole Miss, Southern California kid. LeVar's talked about it at length. DJ Uiagalelei at Clemson, Southern California kid. Like, all these guys are leaving. When I was playing, it was like, no, all these guys wanted to come to USC. So this is going to immediately change the dynamics of recruiting in college football, which is the lifeblood of those teams that succeed and those that don't. And so they get a guy that we know he can recruit and develop quarterbacks. And so that's the first reason. The next reason is, I think especially after this season, USC, Southern Cal's realized how desperate they were to get this right. And Mike Bone, their athletic director, after what I've come to find out, they went after Matt Campbell. He turned it down, tried countering, didn't want it. Didn't feel like it was the right fit. And then they turned and pivoted once they knew that Lincoln Riley didn't want to go to LSU, but there were reservations about OU joining the SEC in 4 years or whatever it is, if not sooner, that OU is not willing to put together the type of resources that you need joining the SEC. Those staffs have a lot more analysts. They have a lot more folks within the football program who are able to help out. They devote more resources to the football program because they can. They have less sports in general. So if you look at the the student athlete sports that are offered, they have less sports than, you know, say a Pac-12 school, for example. But the difference is, you know, Oklahoma wasn't, you know, maybe as willing to put a bunch of funding into that so they can prepare for the competition that will be in the SEC when they go there. And I think that was frustrating to Lincoln. And now he looks at the Pac-12 and a top brand in Southern Cal as desperate. And they are willing to do whatever it took. So he's getting paid a boatload per year. And on top of that, they're going to ensure that he has every resource he needs to build this up and be successful. My only question to this hire is, if you look at what he took over at Oklahoma, it was built by Bob Stoops. And even though he maintained it, he never really got it up past necessarily what Coach Stoops was able to do. He was never able to take that next step. You look at what Jim Tressel, Urban Meyer built at Ohio State. We look at like Ryan Day, who took that over. It was already
built. All inheritance.
Built. Yep. All inherited.
I agree.
He's got to build this back up now, and he's never had to do that before. And so that's the only question I have with this hire is, will he be able to navigate it and figure it out? I would say this. The Pac-12 is so down in my mind. Like, there's no national contender in the Pac-12 South. They should easily win that division every year. There's really no national contender. Say what you want about Oregon. I don't even know if Mario Cristobal is going to stay. He might go to Miami.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's got some personal stuff going on right now, and that's one of the reasons why he's down in Miami. But he's got roots there. And you tell me the easier path to get in the playoff. Miami, with that hotbed and talent, and going through the ACC, which Clemson's the only team you got to worry about there, or what could be now a rising, you know, Southern Cal, more parity. I mean, they couldn't get it done this year in a year where the Pac-12 was down, and they lost a couple of games. So I kind of look at it and say, it's an easy turnaround. He should be able to do it, but he's never had to do it before, LeVar.
Yeah, I like your last point because I'm a tad bit skeptical about it. And yeah, you mentioned there not being a national contender in the pack, and I agree with that. But what they do have is recruiting. Now, I don't know what's going to happen at ASU, and obviously I have personal ties to that coaching staff. But when you think about the roots that are here in Southern California, where this hotbed of talent is, that's being dominated by Arizona State. It's being dominated by Oregon. You got to even throw Washington into that. When I look at
SEC teams are picking top players as well too.
Absolutely. ACC, they're coming to get the linemen, they're coming to get the quarterbacks, they're coming to get the best running back in the state at modern day is going to Oklahoma. Which is funny because maybe he might flip now.
Yes, but, maybe not anymore.
All right, but here's the thing about it though. He's going to have to make sure he does one thing, and one thing in particular is have somebody on his staff that is deeply rooted. And because one thing I learned about Southern California and its football, it is a very, very small circle of people. It is a small circle of guys that are basically dictating everything that's going on with these guys and where they're going. And so he's going to have to make sure that he has somebody who can navigate the politics, so to speak. Some would call it street politics, of what it's going to take to be able to go into the pockets of places to be able to cultivate that talent. I know when we bring on Papa Dacus and we talk about the allure and what USC has to offer, I understand that. But since being here, I got to be honest with you. The competition of getting these top guys is not being dominated. It's not a given that, USC is going to get their fair share of guys. It's not a given. It's really not. And so to me, they're going to have to, as you mentioned, Brady, they're going to have to do something. Lincoln's going to have to do something that really may be difficult, which is create an environment or create a place where people really want to come back and go to it. Because the last time this team has really been good was what? When Reggie Bush and them were there. Yeah, when Carroll was there.
It's 15 years.
That's a long-ass time.
Yeah.
Well, here's the difference, too. Is it was a long-ass time where, look, Pete left for a reason. and it's been well documented what was going on there to help recruit, help give them an advantage. I think the difference now is, and I would just say this universally across all colleges, is you shouldn't have – there shouldn't be an unlevel playing field in regards to what you can recruit. And the reason why I say that is because name, image, and likeness, it's the wild, wild west right now. These schools can essentially – they can't facilitate these deals. It depends on the state laws and all that. But for the most part, it's pretty wide open. If they need to get a kid money now, they can do so legally, and it's not difficult to do that. It didn't used to be like that. You know, Southern Cal was bending the rules in order to get those guys there, and then they build up this behemoth of an absolute factory, sending guys to the NFL and winning a national championship, winning football games. They lost that when they got in trouble. Pete knew it was coming. That's why he jumped ship.
Yeah.
And they've had to figure out how to do it the right way moving forward, and they never have. But what now they have to their advantage is now that door is wide open. And so not only do they have that in their back pocket because they could do so legally, but now they've got Southern California, a coach with name recognition, and he's got, you know, that kind of mantra that, look, he's the type of guy that can develop young quarterbacks and send them to the NFL. If you can get the top quarterback at every class, and oh, by the way, the top one that I think for what, I think his name Malachi Nelson, he's like the top recruit for either 2022 or 2023. He just decommitted last night from Oklahoma. I would suspect he's going to go to Southern Cal now moving forward.
And I think his statement was, you know, I'm going to reevaluate some things. But, you know, that's just reevaluate some
re-evaluate
things.
Reevaluate what?
Yeah.
Property. Here's going to be the interesting thing about this, though, is how many players from Oklahoma transfer to Southern Cal. Because there's this thought that with the transfer portal, Caleb Williams in particular, the quarterback, right? He could transfer and not be penalized at all. There's nothing that stops Caleb Williams from saying, I want to go with my coach. It now allows you to do that. You get one free pass. Your eligibility is not penalized. You don't need to have any sort of hardship that you have to apply to the NCAA. None of that exists anymore. And so you could see a mass exodus out of Norman to Southern California. The only thing that stands in that way is the amount of scholarships you have. And so I wonder if Southern Cal doesn't even work. I mean, they've got obviously a bunch of commitments and all that. It's a lot to juggle because they're going to be able to get the pick that they want from Oklahoma or anywhere else with Lincoln Riley going there now. And you've got these incoming freshmen. Like one of the things we haven't talked about, and this is, you know, more of a national issue, but kind of flies under the radar, is how do you go about managing the amount of scholarships you have with the incoming freshmen from high school, but guys who are on other teams that want to come and play for you that can help you right now, that are more like veteran players, right? Almost the free agency of college football. It's fascinating, and it's going to be interesting to see what Caleb Williams decides to do or any other Oklahoma Sooner that's there right now.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it. Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
I mean, again, like I just can't help but notice that, you know, thank God the Rams moved off of Jared Goff. Thank God, because that was the problem. That was the issue. And so I'm just glad that they're not having to worry about, you know, turnovers.
You went to get them so that you could win games like, you know,
at Lambeau,
Green Bay Packers, you know, going to Lambeau, you know.
You know.
Take the field, do the leap. You know why you're there.
That didn't look good.
Can I ask this question? When you go for a 4th-and-1 on your own 29 in the first quarter of a game on the road, is that more of an indication of what you feel like you're going up against in Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers? Or is it an indication of what you feel like you need to do with your offense, with your team, because of where you're at? Because it came off, and it obviously they ended up not, you know, getting the fourth down conversion. It only ended up being 3 points for Green Bay. But, you know, you're basically, because of where you're at, you're spotting that team that you're maybe concerned about and how good they are offensively with Aaron Rodgers. You're already spotting them another 3 points. That move came off as desperate.
Yeah.
And it's starting to make everything add up and look desperate, right? Like the change from Goff to Stafford, bringing in Odell Beckham. Like now I'm like, oh, okay, all these are like moves of desperation, which is a bit odd because it's not like Sean McVay is under any stress where he's not going to be the coach there after this year or for the foreseeable future. I mean, Les Snead has nothing to do with the decision to go for it on 4th and 1 on your own 29 in the first quarter. So I don't really understand, I guess, the desperation. So maybe that leads me to think it's just because they're on the road versus Green Bay. But did you guys not look at that and go, huh? Like, this is kind of and look, we can talk about the analytics world and all that stuff. If you're a fan of that, then you look dumb now. Like that's why you don't go for 4th and 1 in your own territory in the first quarter going up against a team like the Green Bay Packers at home.
Especially on the road, right?
Like I saw a whole bunch of teams doing it yesterday, though. That's the thing. Like,
not that. And 4th and 1's one thing. Not on your own 29, yeah, when you're giving that team 3 points.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I did see a lot of aggressive actions in terms on 4th downs, more so than I've seen in a long, well, maybe ever. But, you know, I think it has to do with both, to be honest. That could sound like a knee-jerk reaction to go on 4th and 1 where they're at. It could be that you don't necessarily trust, you know, kicking the ball and giving it to Aaron Rodgers. I would say, regardless of whatever the reason is, wherever the truth lies, it wasn't a sound decision. I'll say that. Not at that point in the game. But I don't know. I think that everybody starts to think that they can get 4th and manageable yards anymore. I think that it doesn't matter. It's like this is a part. It's becoming an evolution of the game. We're going to go for it if it's 4th and short.
I mean, there was a lot of on the knee-jerk reaction stuff. Look, there was a lot of people critical of Matt Nagy with some of the stuff he did with his assistant coaches and some of the moves they've made there in Chicago. And Sean McVay's got a little bit of that to him. I mean, let's not forget Wade Phillips, successful defensive coordinator in the NFL for a long time. And that whole exit from LA was kind of weird. And some people felt like, you know, McVay just all of a sudden decided he wanted to go in a different direction, you know, with this team. And it was like, okay, well, I mean, Wade Phillips doesn't seem like he's the problem. It doesn't seem like that's the problem there. And so here the Rams are. They've lost 3 straight. Going into that game, you'd lost a couple in a row. And to Brady's point, you're on the road. I would think I want to give Aaron Rodgers as long of a field in those temperatures to have to work with and trust my defense, as opposed to, no, got to get it now, got to go for it now. And I don't know if it's just Sean McVay's ego. I don't know if he's trying to get Matt Stafford going. Stafford hasn't played well. He turned the ball over a couple of times. They had 3 turnovers yesterday in total. It feels like something's off and something's wrong there, and it feels like they're trying to search for answers. And you can see Sean McVay getting really frustrated on the sidelines, probably thinking to himself, okay, well, at least we've rid ourselves of the Jared Goff issues, but now we've got a guy who's played in this condition before. He's been to Lambeau Field his entire career, and yet here we are. They lose the game. One possession or not, I don't think that game was close. Odell Beckham looks like he's dinged up. It's not working. It doesn't look good for LA right now, just optic-wise.
You're hitting on something there, though. You mentioned Wade Phillips, but this defense was amazing under Brandon Staley. And then he rolls out, and Raheem Morris takes over. And listen, they alluded to it last night, and it's so funny because I kept thinking about you every time Collinsworth would say something. But this defense is not the same defense. One reason or another, with all of the star power that they've amassed on that side of the ball, it's not the same defense. Von Miller doesn't look like a dominant football player right now. He looks like a pretty good football player that has decent moments. I mean, his biggest play was almost accidental. You know, he wasn't really there, but he tripped him up. enough. They are literally hitting Aaron Donald with three or four dudes every single play.
and he's fighting every play.
And he's, I mean, jeez. Did you see the way he had that dude's throat grabbed up? He hemmed his
That was like an Adam's apple
show. Hey, bro.
Like, he wouldn't even try to get the whole neck. He was trying to choke off that Adam's apple.
And that's where you're supposed to do your long arm is on the neck. But the way he grabbed his vocal cords and his Adam's apple, like,
he didn't want to speak
looked
again.
Like he was going to, like, rip it out. But
You ever done that before? You choke someone by their Adam's apple?
I can't say I've ever had somebody grabbed up by their neck like that. I have grabbed necks before, but it never looked like quite like that. That looked very, very savage, you know? And I was proud of him. I mean, he's from where I'm from, and I was like, God dang, he got that man's neck yoked up, you know. But they be beating him up, though. You know, he has to deal with so many guys hitting on him. I'm sure he gets it in when he can get it. But I guess the point I'm making here is, you know, when you look at this Rams defense, you were hoping that they were going to be the dominant force. They were like number one in like almost every rating coming into the year, and you know what? They are not the catalyst for this team anymore. And now you're looking at, okay, well, they're not the catalyst of this team, and you brought in Matthew Stafford to be the catalyst of this team, and he's not being the catalyst of this team, then where do you go? Where does this all go? And I think that's where the Rams are right now. They're trying to figure out, just like anybody else is trying to figure out, where the hell do we go at this point? Somebody has to take the lead, and no one has. And I think that's why they're struggling the way that they are.
Well, and they're kind of old, right? When you look at some of the roster, some of the pieces, like Jonas touched on, hey, Odell Beckham doesn't look healthy, who basically wasn't even there the first half. I wonder if there was a tyrant in the locker room at halftime. He got more involved in the second half. You know, but Stafford's up there in age. Jonas pointed this out a while ago. Got to give him credit for it. He looks like maybe he's not 100% healthy, too.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Whitworth. Other pieces of this offense are getting up there in age. You know, when LeVar mentions kind of like roaming around, like not sure where they are, it's almost like that old grandparent. Like my grandma at times will call me and be like, hey, sweetie. I feel like I'm close to that. I'm like, Grandma, you know, this is how you have to get there. I have to kind of lead her through where she needs to get to at this point. They're kind of like that old aging team that doesn't know where they are. Like, I think we all have like a grandparent who's like that at this point. So
where do they, as far as the NFC West goes right now, if you just look at that division, and I know where the standings are, and obviously Seattle's down.
Right.
Of the three teams at the top, Arizona, San Francisco, and
those
the Rams.
Are the two.
Okay, who do you feel least confident in making
Well, I'll
a
say who I'm most confident in is those two right there that you just said.
Arizona and San Fran.
In that order. In that order right now. And Arizona and San Fran. And the rest of them is just kind of like, forget about it.
And so the Rams, this is concerning moving forward.
I mean,
this isn't just a rough three-game
skid. This is a true skid. This is a tailspin, man, and that's hard. It's hard at this time of the year. Like we say it every week. We've now left November, and you have to deal with trending one way or the other once you get into playing football in November. Because come December, you are either starting to click. And it's coming together like you've been together. The season is well underway. You're beyond the halfway point. You're figuring out what you're going to be. Are you going to be a top seed? Are you chasing a wild card? Are you chasing the division? You have to be showing that you're hitting stride by now. So to be not hitting stride by now, that's alarming to do it now. Like you look at San Francisco, and San Francisco is right around the same record as the Rams, but you're not looking at San Francisco the right way because they're playing better football now than what they were earlier on. Get that out of the way early and have to struggle through it and claw your way back to where you're supposed to be as the season wears on versus you started off fast and then you fell off a cliff. And that's the problem with the Rams right now.
Yeah, they look does not look good for the Rams. Also, by the way, Green Bay looked okay. Green Bay looked fine.
And is anyone playing better football than Aaron Rodgers right now?
It's awesome. You know what I like too? There's zero fear in going against Jalen Ramsey. If Devontae Adams was open, he was throwing it. Had no issues whatsoever going at Jalen Ramsey.
You know what I liked about?
He was throwing Alan Lazard against him.
Yes.
It didn't matter who was on him.
He had zero. He gave zero F's about running on the COVID toe too. Like he got up out of there. And ran for some good yards on the COVID toe.
Well, here's the thing about an injury when you know you're going to get surgery on it. It's like, well,
might as well go ahead and do it.
It's like driving to Miami International Airport with 7 miles to go on a flat tire.
Yeah,
it's already flat. You know, you might as well ride this puppy all the way home.
I mean, were going to ruin the rim, but with that being said, it is what it is, you know? Still going to get it fixed one way or the other.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at FoxSportsRadio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.